Jordan-Hare Stadium for tonight's game.
It's the Wishbone Podcast, your source for Auburn football discussion and commentary. Now, here are your hosts, Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer.
Hello, and welcome to the Wishbone Podcast, brought to you in association with the WarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, I feel a little better now than I did when last we spoke 2 weeks ago. I guess I've recovered somewhat. How are you feeling about things?
In terms of Auburn football, I feel pretty good. I was better than you then, and I think I'm fine now. I'm excited about how the offseason's going, and I'm looking forward to a great 2014.
Yeah, I think time and distance give us a little perspective, and 2 weeks ago I was just on the tail end of being very focused on that game, and now I'm a little more able to see the forest for the trees, maybe. I'm looking back at the whole season and as a whole more. Mm-hmm. And it really was quite a work, you know, quite a success, you know. It's hard to feel bad. It's hard to feel as bad about one component of it when the whole thing was so amazing. So yeah, perspective slowly began to change to where it needs to be, I think.
And the other thing is, I think positive things keep happening, whether it's seniors' performance in the Senior Bowl or recruiting or whatever else. It's good stuff going on.
Yeah, and I think there's no doubt that this coming season should be a very good one. Now, I don't want to set us up for disappointment, but and we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. But with so much of the team coming back, with Gus seeming firmly in control and not going anywhere, hopefully anytime soon, the assistant coaches all pretty much coming back. We do have a few positions that we'll talk about that we're worried about, you know, who will step up and everything. But overall, it's hard to be anything but optimistic moving forward, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, you can't be. The way the season went last year, we were a year or two ahead of schedule. So it's, you got to feel like things are only going to get better for Auburn football.
Right. So looking at 2014 and sort of where we're coming out of and where we're heading, in terms of the calendar, the next big thing would be signing day, right?
Yes.
We just had the Senior Bowl yesterday.
Yes.
And who was the MVP?
D. Ford.
Man, he was awesome. And I didn't get to see it, but everything I've read about it has led me to believe that D tore it up at the Senior Bowl.
I saw the highlights, and he had a great game. And he's a guy that, I think a couple weeks ago, where people were saying, third, fourth, fifth round draft pick. But he had a great end of the season, and he's had a great, postseason working out for teams and the Senior Bowl stuff. And somebody was talking about him being a first round draft pick yesterday.
I heard that. Yeah, that's amazing. So it is an example of how these sort of all-star games really can conceivably elevate your stock. I mean, I know that some players worry that they could actually drop their stock, but and that reminds me, that made me think of McCarron, but speaking of players whose stock was riding about as high as it could be, have you heard if Trey Mason is going to be in any of these games or what?
I don't think so.
Well, he's not a senior, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're eligible to be in that thing.
Okay. So looking sort of ahead at the calendar, then we have National Signing Day coming up in February. A-Day rolling around, I'm guessing, in April probably?
Yes.
Isn't it usually in April?
Yes, they have set a date. Give me 1 second, I'll tell you what it is. Keep going.
And then the traditional voluntary, quote-unquote, I'm doing the air quotes, voluntary summer workouts where the quarterbacks and receivers generally try to get in sync and everything, a little extra time there. And Nick Marshall will be around for the spring and for the summer workouts and everything. So you have to think his passing abilities and skills are only going to get better as the spring and summer go by, and that he'll come into fall practice perhaps night and day, you know, better than he was this past fall. And if he does, you know, because, you know, if you think about Nick Marshall in terms of passing, it was, you know, he would miss a wide open receiver, but then on the next play he'd make this incredible throw. So if he can just get some consistency in the positive side, we already know he can make remarkable throws, you know. So if he can just kind of do it consistently, he's going to be an awesome quarterback.
That's right. I mean, you could see, you know, there was that one throw he made in the SEC championship game where he kind of rolled out and then he threw over two guys into the end zone for a touchdown.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that was an amazing pass. And he made some other passes where you could see he has the arm strength. He has the accuracy when he sets his feet and takes his time and does it. And so I think it's just a question of, you know, Gus and Rhett Lashley working with him and spending the time in the spring and the time with the receivers, working on the routes or practicing that. And I expect a huge, huge level of improvement in the consistency of Marshall and the receivers in the passing game. I think it's going to be a big difference. And I think teams that come out and play Auburn the way that teams were playing Auburn at the end of this year are going to have a real problem because we're going to throw the ball over them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And if he can just sort of eliminate, like, dropping the pass at Ricardo Lewis's feet in the bowl and overthrowing some guys, yeah, I just bring the bottom end up a little bit. The top end is already pretty good. You know, refine that. And
that's right.
Oh, man, yeah, I'm looking forward.
And that's the thing. Like, it's not the, you know, when it's a difficult throw we're worried about, it's the easier throw sometimes that he messes himself up on, where he was like, oh my gosh, this guy is so wide open, I got to get the ball there, and it doesn't work. So
absolutely,
I think, you know, being consistent on those and getting comfortable in that, where his mechanics are the same every time, and he and the receivers are on the same page, they know which way the receiver is going to cut every time, I think you're going to see a huge difference.
And while we're talking about Nick Marshall, a couple of little interesting factoids here. I actually got this from a Kevin Skarbinski column the last couple of days, and I had to mention it while we're talking about Nick. There have been four SEC quarterbacks ever to rush for 1,000 yards or more in a season. Four. One of them was Johnny Manziel. The other three are all Auburn quarterbacks.
Wow.
And of those three, Nick is now one of them. It was Jimmy Seidel. Okay. This is before my time. Jimmy Seidel, Cam, mm-hmm. and Nick. So that's
Tebow
amazing.
Tebow never had 1,000 yards in a season.
You would have thought, but I guess not. But he never really ripped off those long runs. You know, he was always more like a fullback.
You're right.
So, yeah, that, according to Skarbinski, so how as far as you can, you know, take him with a grain of salt, but that's what he said. So I thought that was pretty amazing. So. So let's see, who are we losing and who's coming back other than Marshall that we really feel either really good or really bad about? I mean, I think you kind of got to start with the loss of the offensive with Greg Robinson on the offensive line and with Jay Prosh, the sort of mobile offensive lineman fullback there. What are we going to do to replace them, do you think?
It's a good question. Like we said last time, I think Robinson is the biggest loss in the in terms of the offense. We have some options there. You know, Sean Coleman is a great story. He was technically Robinson's backup this year. He's the guy that we recruited out of Mississippi a couple of years ago that's recovering from cancer. You know, but he's back on the team. He's back practicing full speed. So I
had forgotten how high of a – he was like a five-star player before he got sick.
Oh, sure. He had all kinds of potential before he got sick. So he may not ever get back to that, you know, potential was before that, but it's amazing that he's out there playing SEC football.
Absolutely.
At this point. So that's a great story. I hope he gets on the field and plays some. On the other side, we had a lot of competition at the other tackle with Avery Young and Patrick Miller, and they've kind of gone back and forth. And I expect Avery Young finished the year as a starter. I would shock me a bit if Patrick Miller flipped over the other side and beat out Sean Coleman for the starting job, replacing Robinson. And, you know, both Young and Miller have shown they can start and be effective. So you got to feel like – and they both have game experience in the SEC.
Yeah.
So you have to feel pretty good with, you know, four or five starters back. And, you know, whoever replaces them is going to be somebody that's has some experience in the SEC.
And we got some – I'm trying to think that it seems like all of our we signed a couple of really good offensive line classes there the last 4 or 5 years, and it seems like all of them have been playing almost. I mean, isn't there like a diamond that's working his way up and a couple of others?
Yeah, there's some other backups that are further down the road that could, you know, shift up and be in one of those positions. And then we redshirted some people, and we're bringing in some other people. Let me think about who else is on the offense. Chad, let's see. Slade and Cozine are starting at guard.
There's Young.
Will Adams is a guy that we redshirted. Deion Mix is another offensive lineman that was a freshman this year.
And we're bringing in this Dampier guy to be our backup center, right?
That's right. He's a junior college guy, but he's going to be the backup center and theoretically the center next year. Jordan Diamond is the guy you're thinking about. He's a redshirt freshman, so he was a highly recruited guy too. He has a lot of potential, so he could potentially do it. So I think those are probably the most likely candidates. I think Mix is more of a guard, the last I'd heard, so they could probably be Robert Leff is another guy that we recruited as a redshirt freshman. So out of that group, I still like Patrick Miller is the favorite, but we have a lot of – the good news is – cupboard isn't bare in that department. Have a lot of talent in the second string offensive line, a lot of good guys that could step in and play. And with, you know, four or five guys back, whoever comes in, you know, won't have to, be all world right away. They just have to do their job. And it'll be a drop off from the level of performance that Robinson had this year because he was outstanding. But but the rest of the offensive line being so good and with plenty of time to practice through it, I think we'll be fine there.
So we'll just shuffle the deck around a little bit and throw a couple of new guys in as backups, and we'll see what Sean Coleman can do. He doesn't seem like a new guy by any means. He's been around longer than probably any of them in some ways. So
and like we talked about last time, we're losing Prosh, but we've seen over the years Malzahn does the same with the offense where if he takes what the players can do and adapts the offense to that. And in a year when he has a guy like Prosh or like Eric Smith who can fulfill that kind of fullback role, he uses them. And when he doesn't have that kind of guy, he doesn't use them. So I think, you know, there's not somebody I see leaping out at me that's going to be that anywhere near Prosh at that kind of position. So I think it's going to be more of two tight ends next year. Mm-hmm. You know, could be more three receivers and a tight end kind of stuff, and less of the H-back blocking. But the other thing is this could go hand-in-hand with what we're talking about of more of a passing game too.
Right. Well, yeah, we got Ricky Parks coming back, so you could see him and Uzoma out there, or Uzoma, however we decided to pronounce that. I do this in my classes too. I can never pronounce my students' names. The two tight ends, one more of a blocker, one more of a receiver, and gives you a little flexibility. That'll be very interesting to see. So
I think it's Uzama.
Uzama, okay.
He put something out online the other day. I was reading somewhere, somebody retweeted him where he said it's the middle syllable is pronounced like zombie.
Okay, well that helps. It'll be interesting to see going without having that pure fullback,
That's right.
The little army tank, having to adapt using different players that are better at different things to try to create the same sort of blocking effect, you know, get the same result with a different system, basically.
Right. And Fultz is the other guy at tight end. We never throw him the ball, but he's a pure blocking tight end that played a lot down the stretch and did an excellent job against, you know, Georgia and Alabama and Missouri especially. So
don't forget Melvin Ray. Isn't he a tight end?
No, he's just a gigantic wide receiver.
He's a receiver. I know what he was.
He's a gigantic wide receiver.
I thought he hopped out of a helicopter onto the field in the Rose Bowl and just suddenly, you know, was wide open. So, okay.
So that's the offensive line situation. You know the deal at running back.
Yeah.
We're losing Trey, but we got a lot of guys coming back.
Do you think that Cameron Artis Payne is going to seize the job like Trey did, or do you think that Rock Thomas or one of these other younger players, or maybe one of the two from this last year's recruiting class, What do you think is going to end up happening there?
I suspect that Cameron Artis Payne is going to seize the job and that he's going to be outstanding. This is what I think is going to happen. I think he's going to come in and he is going to really, really take over and show everybody what he can do. You know, we got Peyton Barber can be the backup. I think Jonathan Ford, you know, maybe he stays on defense, maybe he moves over. You know, we still got Marshall to run the ball, probably not as much as he did this year, but maybe. And we still got what's his name? I got in the sweeps.
Grant.
Corey Grant. So, you know, I think Cameron Artis Payne will be the main guy. I think Peyton Barber and Rock Thomas will be kind of battling for the backup main running back. And, you know, Grant will still be doing his specific role. But I think Cameron Artis Payne will seize the job, and I think he'll have an outstanding season. I really think I got the sense he was a little frustrated at the end of the year.
Yeah, and nobody could blame him, really.
No, because he clearly has a lot of ability, but he wasn't getting to show it because we went more and more to Trey Mason, and Trey responded and had, you know, one of the best seasons ever in the SEC. So, but I think Cameron Artis Payne thinks that he can play, you know, at that level, and I think he wants to prove to everybody that he can, and I think he's going to work hard in the offseason and come out, and I think he's going to be outstanding next year.
Yeah, I think there were, like, two things that happened with Payne, one short-term and one long-term, that kind of pulled him back a little bit in the race with Trey. One is the short term was that he had a couple of fumbles early on, and, you know, not egregious. I mean, he wasn't, and I bless his heart, he wasn't Mario Fannin out there, you know, killing us and making us scream, why is he touching the ball? But, you know, just a couple. And then the other was that, do you remember there were incidents when he would get in the game and he would be stuffed for no gain where Trey would have gotten a couple yards out of it, it seemed like. And that surprised me because I thought that Cameron Artis Payne was more the power back, and yet by the end of the season, it seemed like Trey Mason was more of a power back than Payne.
That's right.
So that was just kind of unexpected, especially considering that Cameron Artis Payne was the MVP of the 8A game.
I mean, you could see in the 8A game, you could see in that Missouri game, that one run he had at the goal line.
Oh, that was amazing,
You could see the kind of ability he had there.
Sure.
So I think, you know, he just needs a chance to show that, to show everybody what he can do, and I think he'll be fine.
Yeah, that's going to be great. How do you see the wide receivers shaping up this year as far as – is it going to be – I mean, it's obviously – I mean, you've got to think that the top two are going to be Sammy Coates and our new JUCO guy, right?
Dakeel Williams, yes. Who's the big five? He was the number one junior college player in the country last year. So, I mean, think about in the past, you know, few years, the kind of players that have been the top junior college guy in the country. He's a guy that could come in and make an instant impact and make a big difference. Remember, Sammy Coates was a sophomore this year.
Okay.
I mean, it's not like he's leaving or he's even getting ready to leave. So he's only going to get better.
Yeah.
You know, he's only going to get better. He's going to get, you know, and spending more time with Marshall and route running and, you know, working with each other. He's going to get better. So I think Dakeel Williams is expected to come in and compete right away for a starting job. You got Sammy Coates. You got.
What does this do to Ricardo Lewis when he sees Dakeel Williams coming in? Is he going to, like, try to just run him off campus or something? Or what?
No, I mean, because I think what we can do is, you know, have the two wide receivers that are the further out guys away from the formation. And that could be, you know, Coates and Dakeel Williams. And then we have the slot guy could be Lewis. And also Quan Bray is coming back. He'll be a senior next year.
So Marcus Davis.
So you got Quan Bray, Ricardo Lewis, Marcus Davis. And then you have Sammy Coates and Dakeel Williams. Melvin Ray is still there. I mean, he was only he's a guy that's like going to play professional minor league baseball and come back. So he's older, but he's only a sophomore.
He's another Ronnie Daniels.
He is. So he's kind of a Ronnie Daniels story. I don't know if he's as good as Ronnie Daniels, but he's that kind of story. And we talked this year. I like Marcus Davis a lot too. I mean, he was a very productive player.
Mm-hmm.
And we're signing some other good receivers too. We signed a guy named Stanton Truitt in the early signing period, who's a smaller guy like a Marcus Davis. He's 5'9", 177, but he's a four-star wide receiver athlete type who can be that same kind of guy. He's very explosive in high school. So I think, you know, he's a guy that could come in and play that same kind of role. So we got plenty of weapons, I think, at wide receiver. I mean, I think put Ricardo Lewis, give him another year to work with Damian Craig and on his consistency as a player. You put him, Coates, and Dakeel Williams out there, and teams are worried about running the ball at him, and you drop Marshall back and chuck it at those guys. I think we're going to do some real damage to people.
You know, talking about Ronnie Daniels and all this and thinking about these running backs and everything, for some reason I flash back to Tommy Tuberville's first season and think what he would have done to have had the players stocked up at running back and receiver and all that we've got this year. It's just amazing the cupboard was not bare and Gus has only been adding to it, you know?
That's right.
Our talent level now compared to like 1999 and – in the early, and then I guess 2008 and thereabouts, it's really remarkable.
There's a lot of talent on this team. That's the thing we talked about, before the year, is I really feel like 2014 is our year. I mean, more than 2013 even, because the rest of the SEC is losing senior quarterbacks and they're going to step back a little bit. And I think, we have a ton of talent. So I think
in good shape. Except for the schedule, and we're going to get to that in a little bit and talk about the 2014 schedule very briefly. Obviously, later this summer, we'll go in and do our usual, breaking down of the schedule game by game. But we'll kind of do an overview and just sort of what our overall sense of it is. So
sure.
So any other recruits coming in that can make a big splash in your mind?
Well, let's flip over and talk about defense for a minute.
Yeah, sure.
All right, so we're losing D. Ford. Losing Nosa Igwe, those are the two big losses up front. Losing Jake Holland, which he played a lot. He did what he could. Chris Davis, Ryan Smith, Ryan White.
Yeah.
The thing people forget about the secondary, I think, is we had two guys who would have been starters who missed, either the whole season or the second half of the season.
Yeah.
Josh Holsey was the starter at safety before he got hurt midseason. Mm-hmm. And so when people think about, these teams threw for all these yards on us, we really should have had him and Garrett able to play in the secondary. Justin Garrett's coming back. He's going to play. Holsey's coming back. Hopefully he'll be full speed and be able to play. But those guys out in the defensive backfield, we still got Mincy. We still got Whitehead. We got Jonathan Jones, who came back and made some big plays down the stretch. He was only a sophomore this year. Put those guys back there with, talk about the Jonathan Ford is there. There's talk about Quan Bray changing positions. You have Holsey. You have Garrett. You got, Robinson Therese and McEnroe Alexander already back there, played some star. So I feel pretty good about the secondary. Chris Davis made a lot of plays for Auburn and was really good. And, Ryan Smith and Ryan White stepped up a lot, especially in the second half of the season. We lost Holsey played a lot of snaps, but I think we're going to be okay there. Linebacker, I think honestly will be better.
Yeah.
And
because we got the guys coming back that we like, and then we'll be adding to it.
That's right. I mean, Casanova McKenzie was a solid player.
Very solid.
I mean, and Anthony Swain played off the bench and did some things. Chris Frost kind of got better as the year went along.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the year, he was, made some plays, but he also was kind of lost sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's a position where, we redshirted one of the best linebacker recruits. And then, in terms of bringing in guys, we have one of the best linebacker classes coming in.
And could get even better depending on what happens in the next couple of weeks, right?
That's right.
We're going to wait and see.
That's right. I mean, we got Trey Williams is one of the top recruits in the country. He's a kind of a four or five star linebacker recruit out of Mobile. And then we got a guy named Deshaun Davis out of Pritchard, who's also a good linebacker. So I think those guys together, there's potential for some other guys.
Evans is the one everybody's waiting to see now.
That's right.
But that really goes back to what you've said before. I think you made a really good point before, correct me if I'm wrong, that it's the ones that don't commit early that we talk about like they're the best players, but the best players may have already committed months ago, It's kind of like what happened with Carl Lawson. Remember last year?
That's right.
Where people weren't talking about him because he was a lock for Auburn, and so everybody was focusing on the ones that hadn't decided at the end. But I think we're very happy with how it played out now, you know.
That's right, because you look back and go, yeah, Carl Lawson, he's pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, I don't know if there's a freshman in the country that I would trade Carl Lawson for right now.
Right.
That guy's a monster.
So Rashawn Evans may be great, but he may not be that much better than Trey Williams or somebody else that we've got already, right?
That's right. And I mean, Williams has been committed to Auburn along, and he's out there recruiting for us and stuff. So it's exciting to see what happens. So, I mean, and again, because of the defense they play, we only play two linebackers, so we don't have to have a ton of guys. I mean, some of these guys will shift over and play star. But, you know, I think there's the potential at that position to get better, and I think that'll make the defense better.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about with regard to Justin Garrett coming back. He had moved to linebacker, but that was when they weren't even sure he was going to get to play, and then he didn't ever get on the field all season. He set foot on the field like two plays, and then it just wasn't working, right, and they redshirted.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when he comes back, where do you think he's going to play? Is he going to try to compete with Robinson Therese for his old spot, which he kind of lost because of injury, but Therese has nailed down in a national championship game appearance season? Or do you put him in a different position? What do you do with Justin Garrett? It's kind of a weird situation.
It is. I don't know if one of them could shift over and play, you know, free safety or something. Maybe 3Z could do that, and you play Garrett at star, or you move Garrett up and he plays, you know, weak side linebacker. But he's a little undersized for that. So I think the best case scenario is, you know, in situations where we want to go to a nickel, we play both of them as kind of stars, one of them is the extra defensive back. So I think that's probably what we'll do. And the way teams throw the ball now, you're in nickel half the time anyway. So,
well, you know, think about it. It is pretty amazing that the two star players of the spring last year, right? This time last year, well, a little bit later, you know, March, mm-hmm. April. This time last year, the player on offense and the player on defense that were being touted as the stars, the studs on our team, neither one of them played significant time the entire season. Cameron Artis Payne and Justin Garrett, and they're both back.
That's right.
That's amazing. Clearly
they could both, you know, make a big impact this season. They've showed what they did in the offseason last year. And they could. You're right. I mean, I think it just shows like how much talent there is on this team that those two guys were expected to be, you know, kind of the bell cows on the offense and defense, and they weren't there.
Neither one of them played. Yeah. I mean, well, Payne obviously a little bit more, but still he was obviously deep second fiddle. So,
but he didn't play the level he thought he was going to play.
Yeah. And then go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, on defensive line, we'll lose with Ford and Igwe, but we got, you know, this core of defensive tackles that have been there a couple of years, Gabe Wright and those kind of guys. We got Ben Bradley, who I thought made a lot of plays down the stretch. He was a junior college guy. And then at defensive end, I think we're going to be okay. We got Montrevious Adams, who obviously you put him and Gabe Wright on the field next year, I think we're going to be fine. And you have Bradley and a couple of the guys backing him up. And then at defensive end, you know, we'll have Elijah Daniel, Carl Lawson, Ladarius Owens. You know, I think we're going to be fine at that position too. I mean, Lawson's going to have to step up and be that kind of guy that D Ford was. It's kind of the ace, go after the quarterback all the time guy, make things happen in the backfield. But I think he clearly has the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I think about Reuben Foster that we thought we were going to get and we didn't have because he went off to Alabama. And I think in Reuben Foster's 1 year of college football, he has seen the team that he spurned win the Iron Bowl and go to the national championship game, and players like Carl Lawson play quite a bit that would have come in with him. And the team that he went to, I don't think he ever touched the field and lost the Iron Bowl and got blown out in their bowl game. So I hope you're enjoying your decision there, Reuben. You know, enjoy Tuscaloosa. But he does have beautiful downtown Tuscaloosa to console him, so there's that.
Absolutely.
There you go. But I wanted to ask about special teams. We got to replace the whole shooting match over there. But we've got good players coming in, right?
We do. I mean, we had two guys that we had recruited before. Daniel Carlson is going to be the kicker, and Jimmy Hutchison is going to be the punter. I mean, assuming that there's not some kind of battle with some invited walk-ons or anything that they don't win. But those are the two guys we recruited at those positions. They've been there a year. They practice with the team. They've, you know, been doing the weight training and stuff. So I fully expect those guys to be fine and to be able to do the job. So, but you're right. Parkey and Stephen Clark set a huge, very high standard for the performance of special teams. And those guys are going to have a lot to live up to, especially when you talk about, you know, doing it in a road game in a very hostile, pressure-filled conditions.
You know, I think that kicker and punter are sort of underrated in Auburn history. We probably could have done a couple of pages in Decades of Dominance about that. We've always had at least good, if not really good, kickers and punters. It never seems to change year in and year out. I mean, you know, we've had a steady string of both.
That's right.
And we've been very fortunate in that regard, and I hope it continues here.
We went through a phase, you know, 6 or 7 years ago where the coverage units on special teams were bad.
Yeah.
But a lot of that was just due to the lack of depth of talent on the team.
Yeah.
There wasn't all these, you know, freshmen and sophomore linebackers and defensive backs and, you know, that you could put on special teams that run down and make plays. We just didn't have those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And now we do. And so the coverage teams are excellent. And the kickers, we've been consistently good at special teams for, you know, a good while now. It's very impressive.
Yeah, I was trying to think. The only times I can remember that the kicking game was ever shaky was there were those early years under Tuberville when basically Damon Duval was having to do everything, and he would be a little inconsistent maybe at times in some things, mm-hmm. but he still, you know, he was having to carry all the load by himself. So, and he wasn't even recruited to do at least half of that job. One of those two things. So yeah, I mean, when we've had the players, I mean, we've never been in the situation that you see these teams in where they put a kicker out there knowing there's a 50-50 shot he's even going to make it. You know, you always
That's
feel
right.
pretty good about who we roll out there. And sure. And Clark had an amazing punting year last year.
He did. Really, one of the most underrated players in terms of Auburn success. Clark was outstanding, pinning guys deep. The other thing is he didn't have the best distance, but he got great hang time on his punt, so they never got returned.
Yeah.
He always punted it up. The other guy had to call a fair catch or let it go out of bounds, or we pinned it deep. They never got to return it. So there's lots of punters that kicked it, you know, further, but the other team would pick it up and run it back 20 yards in the opposite direction. So the net effect was a lot worse for the team. So I think Clark had an excellent year, really made a difference. The one special teams thing I worry about a little bit is I thought Chris Davis stepped in and really made a difference as punt returner.
Yeah.
That position has been kind of for a few years in terms of guys just catching the ball and that kind of stuff. And Chris Davis really solidified that. And so now we're going to need somebody else to step up.
Oh, gosh. There's nothing that makes me more nervous in football than watching the punt return guy try to catch the ball while the other side bears down on him. I just And we've had some adventures there over the years. So
that's right.
Yeah, but Chris was as consistent as anybody I've ever. I had less high blood pressure with him doing it than anybody else I can think of in a long time, other than maybe Darvin Adams, who had Velcro for arms. But yeah, that's
sure.
So
you got. I mean, in terms of strength, you got to feel like that we're going to be able to line up and run the ball again next year. With Gus and the offensive line, the running backs we have, Marshall, you got to feel like we're 100% going to be able to run the ball on people. Defensively, I think, you know, we're going to be pretty good up front. We'll be able to get some pressure on people. You still got to worry about can we cover other teams' receivers and stuff. But I think, you know, over the next couple of years, Auburn's defense is going to get better and better and not, you know, kind of catch up with the offense.
And the coaching, there's no pretty much everybody's back, right? I'm qualifying that because I feel like I may have missed some news somewhere, but everybody's back, right?
Everybody's back on the Auburn staff, and there was, you know, which is great news. You want consistency, because we have a great staff. These guys are out there recruiting, they're, you know, working with the players on campus, and so that was really, really good. I think, you know, you were worried at some point that somebody's going to hire Rhett Lashley away, and down the road, you know, that may be an issue where teams are coming after him or coming after Damian Craig. But
yeah, I'm going to say now I've heard talk that maybe Damian Craig is kind of looking for a head coaching job, which would be awesome. I wish him all the best, but I sure do like having him on our sideline in the meantime.
That's right. So, I mean, and that's a lot of these guys, that's their ultimate goal. And, you know, you wish him the best if he gets that opportunity. So, but for now, we're in great shape because everybody's back.
Mm-hmm. anything else with regard to the 2014 team before we look at the schedule a little bit?
No, I mean, I think we're going to have another excellent recruiting class. I mean, like we said, there's not a lot of positions of immediate need other than linebacker. I mean, some guys in the secondary would be nice, so we got some of those. But I think, you know, we're going to be in good shape. You know, the things that we need, running backs, offensive linemen, those kind of things, I think we'll be fine. And we got a lot, some good players come in. They're going to make a difference. So just enjoy it.
Now, obviously, a huge part of what makes a team successful are the players and the coaches we've just been talking about. But there's also the schedule consideration. And we did have a favorable schedule in 2013. I mean, certainly, it's so funny to look back now that you and I know I was definitely, I was saying, you know, it's too bad that we happen to have this strange Auburn and, I mean, this strange in Auburn deal with Alabama and Georgia that year. Now, it seems like we're going forward with that configuration. I'd never dreamed that Auburn would agree to any kind of a schedule where the Alabama and Georgia games are both away from Jordan-Hare in the same season. It's nice having them both at home, and we took advantage of that this year. But having them both away is just strange. It means our last home game is going to end up being like homecoming, like that,
yeah,
the cupcake game.
Sanford.
Yeah, that's... We always close out the season with Georgia or Alabama. So if this is the price we pay for getting Texas A&M and Missouri, I may have to rethink my position on expanding the conference, because that's not good.
Well, but here, how do you get out of this? The only way you get out of this is we turn around and play 2 years at Georgia. Are you willing to do that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, yeah, you're right. That's but do you remember when this first came up, I was making a big point about this, and nobody could give me a solid answer. Nobody was really sure. I was hearing every different opinion in the world. Remember, I said, how do you get out of this? Do we have to play twice at Georgia? Be like, no, no, we're not going to do that. Well, how do you do it then? You got to do something.
No, and you're right. I don't like the both on the road, both at home schedule thing.
Yeah, it's just weird. Well, we do make up for it to some degree, though, by having the new Texas A&M rivalry. So that gives you one more SEC West team that's not Ole Miss and Mississippi State that will be coming to Auburn in that year. Thank goodness they've scheduled it to where that Texas A&M comes to Auburn when Georgia and Alabama are away. So that helps.
Sure. And it's in November.
Yeah.
So that, it is kind of a big late season game.
Yeah. And you wouldn't want it between Georgia and Alabama. So Samford kind of gets to be your default final home game period, I guess.
That's right.
Well, let's kind of go through it. We have this weird situation this year where we open up, is it possibly on Thursday night?
No, it's going to be on Saturday.
It's going to be on Saturday with Arkansas in Auburn. We've never started the season with Arkansas. We've started the season, when I think about opening the season at home with an SEC team, I think about Ole Miss. Because for a number of years, Ole Miss was our first game. And back before that, Kentucky was a couple of times. But that's about it, right?
Yeah, I think we have opened with Ole Miss. That's the one I remember.
Yeah.
And probably have opened with Kentucky at some point in the past. But this is about the new SEC TV network.
Yeah.
That they're kicking off. And there's one other SEC game that's on the Thursday night to start the season. And they're going to show that game. And then they're going to show this game. So you need to make sure that your cable provider has the SEC network. Because this game isn't going to be on ESPN or anything.
Well, being on the SEC network means it basically is going to be on ESPN, right? It's just going to be we have our own channel on the ESPN family of networks. But
right, but every cable provider isn't going to carry it, so you have to check on that.
Well, you know, I've got to think that it will have it just because we've got the Longhorn Network and we've got the Big Ten Network.
If you got the Longhorn Network, you got to be all right.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. That I can watch Texas play. I can watch any game Texas won on TV because they're not going to show. It's just so stupid, right? You know who's going to win the game. With Missouri in the conference now, this is part of the reason that we put Missouri in the conference was so that St. Louis would have the SEC on television. And so you got to think that we'll have it here, right? That's the purpose of having Missouri in the conference, is so that I can.
You're right.
Is so that I can, because I am a St. Louis Metro TV viewer, and they put Missouri in the conference for me specifically,
so that we could get you SEC football. That's what it was really all about.
Absolutely, and I approve of that message. All right. All right, so we open up with Arkansas on a Saturday. Great. During Dragon Con, we'll have an Auburn home game, and I'll be aggravated. But actually, next year we'll be in Atlanta, won't we, for the Virginia Tech game?
Louisville.
I mean Louisville, yeah.
That's right.
You got to come down to that one, see. That way I can skip out on a couple of Dragon Con panels and jog over to whatever stadium they're playing in now, and then because they're tearing down the Georgia Dome, you know.
Eventually,
which is,
yes.
Which is insane. So
it is insane.
Absolutely insane. I was in the first game ever played in that stadium. A Philadelphia Eagles preseason game in 91, 92, something like that. All right, so Arkansas, and then we've got San Jose State. That'll be interesting. Now, wait a minute. Is this San Jose? I get all those, like, 15 Sands and states in California mixed up. Is San Jose State one of those good ones that try to get into a BCS game, or are they one of those doormats? Remind me here.
I think they're not bad.
Oh, great.
Well,
that's great.
No. This is good. Do you know why?
No.
There's a playoff.
Oh,
there's a playoff committee.
Yeah.
Strength of schedule matter.
Okay, and it's in Auburn. So we should have no problem with that then, hopefully. We have an open date on Breakaway Day, September 13th. There's like five people listening that know what I mean when I say that September 13th is Breakaway Day. You may be one of them. Moon gets blasted out of Earth orbit. Let's see. September 20th, we go to Manhattan, Kansas. Now, this is in question, and I'm very upset because the game is scheduled in Manhattan, Kansas, Kansas State University, on Saturday, September 20th, and my family and I are going. Mm-hmm. But what does ESPN want to do, John?
Potentially make it a Thursday night game.
Because I'll have to take Thursday and Friday off, my wife will have to take Thursday and Friday off, and my kids will have to miss 2 days of school just to go to a football game in Kansas. It seems ridiculous.
And I've been to Manhattan, Kansas. That's not...
You have.
Somewhere you want to hang out. Yeah. I think it's possible there'll be the Thursday night game. I also think it could be a Saturday night game because it's at Kansas State. It's not going to be on CBS. ABC or ESPN has the rights to it. So it could be the Saturday night ESPN game. It could be the Saturday night ABC national game.
Oh.
If Auburn's highly ranked and Kansas State's in the top 20, they may choose that as that kind of the game that Britt Musburger and Herb Street called this last year.
Like the Clemson Florida State type of game.
Right. It'll be like that on ABC. So I think that's the other possibility. If both teams are ranked, I think they could do that.
Well, I hope so, because I really want to go, and I just don't see any way that I could go. I even tweeted to Jay Jacobs and said, please don't move this game, because my family has been waiting. We really want to go. We don't get many games up here that are more than an eight-hour drive away, or less than an eight-hour drive away, so we really want to go to that one. We come back on the 27th at home with Louisiana Tech, who's always kind of a mediocre team.
Yep.
October 4th, LSU in Auburn. So we do have – four decent SEC games at home, and tell me if I'm missing one. We've got Arkansas, LSU, South Carolina, and Texas A&M all in Auburn. So that's not a bad home slate.
It's a pretty good home schedule.
I don't know what we're doing playing South Carolina again. We just played them at home in 2010, and we haven't even played Missouri yet. So why are we back to playing South Carolina again? This schedule just gives me a headache. I don't even like to think about it. Okay, so October 4th is LSU and Auburn. Then we go to Stark Vegas to play the mighty Mississippi State Bulldogs on October the 11th.
Bringing back Dak Prescott at quarterback.
Oh, Lord. This must be one of those weird extra week years because we have another open date on October the 18th. And then we welcome South Carolina on the 25th of October. That should be an interesting game. They were like the second highest ranked SEC team at the end of the year or something, weren't they?
They do. They lost a lot of guys, but you know, that's gonna be a tough game.
Let's see, November 1st at Oxford to play Ole Miss.
Mm-hmm.
That might be one I could sneak down to if the Kansas State thing doesn't work out. November 8th, we have Texas A&M at home. That's the last big home game before the end. We will go to Athens. Man, I miss going to Athens. I went to the Auburn-Georgia game in Athens probably 7 times in a row over a 14-year period. A lot of that time I lived in Lawrenceville, so it was only about 30 minutes, you know, up 316 to get there. And that's a fun place to go to a football game. So I will miss that. But it's like 10 hours from here. So
that's right.
November 22nd is Samford, not the ones with the tree, the ones from Birmingham. And then we go to Tuscaloosa on November 29th for the Iron Bowl. So what are your thoughts about that schedule overall?
I don't love finishing at Georgia and Alabama, but again, I think, you know, we start with an SEC game, but it's Arkansas, and they were pretty bad this year. They'll be better next year, but not great. I mean, the road game at Kansas State worries me a little bit. They're very well coached. They're going to be a solid team. They're going to be fired up to have an SEC team come out there to play them. So that's going to be tricky. I like having LSU and South Carolina A&M at home because those are all good teams, and they're going to be good home games for the fans and also going to be tough games. I mean, you know, I feel like it's overall it's pretty good. Going to Georgia and Alabama is a tough way to end it, but you know, I feel like we can win at the Mississippi schools. You know, I think we can beat Kansas State. So really, the going to Georgia and Alabama are the games that worry me the most, probably.
Well, I guess if you look at it from last year by comparison, San Jose State would be your Arkansas State to a certain degree, but that's an upgrade.
Yeah,
I think if that is who I'm thinking about. Kansas State is sort of your Washington State from last year, but again, probably an upgrade.
They're a bunch better, Washington State.
Yeah, so we've got to hope that we're a bunch better than we were this time last year. That time last year, I guess. So, but I think we will be. Yeah, in fact, it's funny. I was hearing, maybe it was Gus talking about, you know, looking back at last season and how, you know, we started out a very mediocre team, barely beating Washington State, you know, and barely getting by Mississippi State. And that team so improved so much. And I think that 2014, I mean, hopefully we'll start out, you know, with our feet under us, ready to roll and not having to slowly climb up, you know, to be able to compete with those teams. So,
sure.
Yeah, I feel pretty good. I mean, we've certainly got at least, the three winnable non-conference games, not counting Kansas State, and so we'll go through them game by game after the spring and kind of break that all down. So
the other thing I always look for is like, what are the tough stretches? What are you going to have 2 or 3 games in a row with some road games or some tough SEC games mixed in? Like we play LSU at home and then go to Mississippi State. That's pretty tough.
But we have Louisiana Tech on one side of it and Open Date on the other, so it breaks it up a little bit.
Right, but I'm just talking about when you go into Starkville, you kind of beat up for playing LSU a little bit. And then at the end of towards the end of the year, we have kind of a 3-game stretch where we play at Ole Miss, A&M at home, at Georgia.
Well, it was South Carolina the week before that.
That's kind of a tough 4-game stretch there.
We come out of the October 18th Open Date, which we'll probably need to get ready for that 4-game bang, 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 bang. South Carolina, yeah. Ole Miss, Texas A&M, and Georgia. Wow, that's a pretty tough stretch.
Yep, that's right.
So, and then poor Samford gets to play our scrubs while everybody recovers for Alabama. Okay, well, I don't want to say too much more about the schedule because we'll have a lot more to say about it later on, but let me pause here for just a second here as we move into our last couple of segments. John and I are the authors of 2 books about Auburn football, and we've been neglectful of really mentioning them much lately, but we do want to make sure everybody is aware, because we've got a lot of new listeners that have come along, you know, with the success of the football team the last few months. And so if you'll check out on Amazon or in bookstores, can get them. We did Season of Our Dreams about the 2010 team, which we broke down each week of the season, sort of what people were talking about leading up to that game. And then we did this past year, Decades of Dominance, Auburn Football in the Modern Era, which looks back at the last 30 or so years And in fact, I will be at the Alabama Book Festival or Literary Festival sometime this spring or summer. They're wanting me to come in and talk about this book some at their event. So, all right. We have any listener questions this week?
A few.
Okay. I asked very late, and I apologize to our listeners, but it was my fault. This week we were not exactly sure when we were going to do the show this week, and I waited too late to ask on Twitter. So I'm sorry, gang. We'll do better next time.
We had a question, from one of our regular listeners, Ross Hatcher, who said, "Which, if any, coaches do we think we might lose in the offseason, if any?" And clearly, at this point, we haven't lost any.
Yeah.
So you got to feel pretty good about that. There were some discussion, like we said, about a couple, but that's one where, we were very fortunate. The other thing, you had a big back and forth discussion with Jerry Hinnon about the unclaimed national titles.
Oh gosh, yes.
discussion, I thought that was very good back and forth about that.
Jerry is awesome, and I didn't. There was nothing acrimonious about it. We were just having a difference of opinion as far as I used to exactly have the same opinion he does, where he was basically saying, "Let's don't be like Alabama. Let's don't claim anything that's not clear cut." And I was saying my view, to quote President Obama, my view on this has sort of evolved. And a large part of that was because Michael Scott Nicky is so persuasive in laying out the reasons beyond just the short, in my opinion, short-sighted, view of saying Alabama must dictate to us what we do and don't do. And I think that we have to be ourselves and think for ourselves. And frankly, a lot of the ones they claim are much more dubious than the ones that we're talking about claiming. You can't look at half of Alabama's national championships that they claim that nobody else recognizes and compare them to 1913, for example. You just can't.
That's right.
Alabama has a year where they lost to Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and they claim it as a national championship. The 1913 team almost did not get scored upon. That's not even close.
And I think the point of this discussion is you should be able to have the discussion without even bringing up Alabama.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
Say, look at what this 1913 team did. We ought to go out of our way to recognize their achievements.
Yes.
And that's the right thing to do. So forget about anybody else and how anybody else feels about it. And this is the other part that I think a lot of fans don't appreciate is no one is going to come along and hand Auburn a cookie and say, oh, yes, now we decided 1913 is the national champion.
Right.
They're just not. It's one of these things. College football is kind of completely deregulated in this regard, especially before the BCS era. It was whatever different groups proclaimed different national titles and teams claimed them. So if you go back and look at certain years, there's probably four or five teams that claimed the national title. And so I think that's one where Auburn can say absolutely that it's pretty legitimate.
I would put it this way, just because Alabama tries to pave their driveway and does a crappy job and it has potholes, that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to pave our driveway. How's that for you? I have no idea what that means, but
outstanding.
Thank you. All right.
Good analogy.
I you're being kind. All right. any other listener questions?
No, but if you have some questions, send us a contact us on Twitter at AUWishbone or at Van Allen Puxico or at JK Ringer. We'll be happy to work him in the next time we do this.
Absolutely. Let's see. You had made a note here, I see, about juniors leaving early for the NFL around the SEC, so not just Auburn.
Right. I think a lot of people maybe missed who all the other teams lost, and there were a lot of big-name players, and some of which are going to affect us because their teams are on our schedule next year. I mean, most people probably know about the Alabama players. They lost the big offensive lineman, Cyrus Quanjo. They lost Ha-Ha Clinton Dix. They already were losing, McCarron and Mosley because they were seniors.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost their other Pagan, their best defensive lineman. So they were losing a lot of guys already. You look, for example, a team like South Carolina, Clowney, everybody knew he was going to go. But they also lost Bruce Ellington, who was an excellent player.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost somebody else that was really good. that I had a second ago. The name just completely flipped me. LSU, again, for the second year in a row, lost a ton of guys. They lost both their best defensive tackles. They lost one of their offensive linemen. And they lost the running back that killed us. You know, Jeremy Hill.
Jeremy Hill, yeah.
He can go punch people in the NFL now. So, and they lost. And, again, LSU, a team that, you know, was not bad this year but not great, lost Jeremy Hill, starting quarterback Mettenberger, and both receivers declared early for the NFL draft.
Wow, yeah.
So that's a team you got to think – there's a huge, huge void there.
I got to say this. We're not going to we've moved past the schedule, and we're not going to get in any kind of game analysis or anything for a while, for months. But I have to say this, John. In the proverbial circling them on the schedule category –
sure.
I circled LSU. We are going to beat down LSU this year. If nothing else, we are going to beat down LSU this year. Mark my words. Engrave it in stone.
To prove what last year was a little...
Not to prove anything. Just that they have it coming and we're going to give it to them.
Okay.
I just...
Ole Miss lost, for example, with Dante Moncrief, who is their big receiver, who made a lot of plays for them. That's going to hurt them.
Oh yeah.
Some other, you know, we already know that a lot of SEC teams lost their starting quarterbacks. Obviously, A&M lost Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans. So those are huge losses for them.
Oh yeah, that's their offense.
That's right. I mean, those two. You think about the end of the year. What else do they have? So I mean, that team, they've recruited well. They have some good talent at wide receiver, but that's a team that could take a step backwards. LSU, they lost a ton of players. And you look at the, you know, both receivers, quarterback, running back, both defensive tackles, some other guys on defense are losing. They could, you know, not be as good. Alabama lost, you know, longtime senior quarterback, you know, losing probably three or four of their best players on defense, the best offensive lineman. That's not going to help them. South Carolina, the other guy that South Carolina lost, I was trying to think of, was Kelsey Quarles, who was their other best defensive lineman besides Clowney. So you take those guys, Ellington, off the team. They still have, you know, Mike Davis coming back, and they lost their quarterback too, who was so good for so long. But they have the guy, the backup quarterback South Carolina does, who played a lot this year. So I just wanted to get into that because I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, left other SEC schools are going to impact when we play them.
If you are listening to our show right now and you're not an Auburn person, and that's great, we welcome you aboard, understand this. Of all 14 SEC teams last season, Auburn won the SEC and went to the national championship game, and nobody else did. You just heard John describe the wealth of players that those other teams are losing, and we are barely losing anything.
Mm-hmm.
You have to feel good about Auburn in 2014 when you think about that.
That's right.
It's amazing.
So, but we already went through kind of the Auburn depth chart about the talent coming back.
Yeah.
And you got to think, you know, for those other teams, you know, it's a big drop off. It is. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know LSU's bringing in this super duper running back, supposedly, they think, right?
Yeah, but
LaFleur or something. But
and they got some other guys on the depth chart, but you know, there's a lot of other positions they got to have guys step up, you know.
Yeah.
To be competitive again, so.
Yeah. We had a couple other things on the agenda. Anything else about the 2013 season? We've talked a little bit about it in passing as we've gone along here.
No, I mean, we could come back and talk some more about it on a game-by-game basis, looking back at those games and how well the team played, how much better they got. I think it's a sign of great coaching, and I think when you give these coaches, this group of players, you know, with the taste in their mouth of unfinished business.
Oh, yes.
You know, and the desire to go back and finish the job, I think with these coaches and these players, the talent they have, and with that kind of taste of we got to get better so we can go back there and take care of business – I think you're going to see Auburn come out and be a better team next year.
And, you know, honestly, I have to say this. I don't think that we, quote unquote, got lucky in 2013, but we certainly had a few advantageous things happen for us, put it that way.
Sure.
And those things don't always happen your way. And when you're Auburn, usually they happen the other way. we have sort of been a snake bitten team a lot of our history, and so of our program, you know. And so I feel like we could be better this year than we were in 2013 and not get as far, just like we've talked about, you know, just like we talked about Vanderbilt could be better last year than they were the year before and not have as many wins.
That's
you know,
right.
We could be a better team in 2014 and Georgia just happened to fall on a ball in the end zone and beat us, or, you know, Alabama block a field goal and run it back or something and beat us. So you never know how those breaks are going to go, and you're never going to get all of them. And so you have to be a better team in order to overcome or not be in those positions where something fluky can be victory or defeat, you know. And so I would not want to just tread water. We have to get better and move forward to be in a position to have a better chance to go back.
Oh, and this is what I was trying to think of. This is the thing I emailed you the other day about, that I think we're going to see, because so many SEC teams are losing their starting quarterback and a lot of other great offensive talent in the SEC. I mean, the LSU receivers, Mike Evans, the receiver for Ole Miss, those kind of guys, a lot of good Trey Mason. A lot of SEC teams, their offenses are going to take a step back next year. I think scoring and total offense are going to be down across the SEC. And I think defenses are going to play better. But some of the defenses playing better is going to be the offenses just aren't as good. Quarterback play isn't as good. And so two things are going to happen because this. One is you're going to see a lot of storylines. You can go ahead and write this down right now. You're going to see a lot of newspaper articles and ESPN specials about defenses back in the SEC and SEC defenses are back on top and all this stuff, because the statistics will look better and there will be lower scoring games for many SEC games. But part of that is because the offensive talent has gotten worse. Now, some of the defensive players are coming back and they'll get better, but the offenses are going down. The other side of that is Auburn's offense is going to be right there where it was at a very high level. This year, 2013, there were a lot of SEC teams that could play in a shootout in the SEC with Auburn.
That's
because
right.
They had the skill position talent to do so. In 2014, there are not as many SEC teams who want to get on a field with Auburn and play in a shootout. So I think – the kind of teams that could, you know, stay with Auburn in a 30-40 point game, there are not many of those in the SEC next year. You know, so I think that's an area where you're going to see two storylines: defenses, you know, getting better back to SEC level, and then teams that, you know, Auburn, if they come out and play at a high level on offense, there's not many teams that can hang with them.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. So if we get better on defense, our offense stays the same or even gets better, I feel pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing we want to do here, and hopefully we don't have much time to do this because it's not going to be very much fun, and I hate to end on a downer note, but I just feel like we do need to touch on this a little bit, is, brace yourself, Auburn basketball. Yes, Auburn does play basketball, and I felt like we needed to touch on it a little bit. Were you aware that Auburn currently fielded a basketball program?
I'm very aware.
In that lovely building, right, that you can sit in there and have a nice, comfortable seat in a nice new building to watch the carnage. Now, a couple of things. My understanding, and I haven't paid much attention to it yet, I'm about to shift into basketball and then soccer mode. Oh, and by the way, we've got to do a couple of World Cup episodes later on. That may have just lost half of our listenership to even say that, but I do want to do a couple of special episodes talking about the World Cup if you're up for it. If not, you know, I'll do it by myself.
I'll be happy to do what I can.
All right. And I will be bringing back the World Cup blog, 30 Days of the World Cup. I'm not going to do the World Cup of beers where I drink like 30 beers or something this year like I have in the past, but and find the winner. But we are going to do the world 30 Days of the World Cup blog online. So I'll be letting y'all know. It's a humor thing, really. So anyway, the basketball team, I wanted to kind of run. I think they've lost five games lately in a row, and they were all fairly close in the SEC. Does that ring a bell for you? Okay. But they were in them. As terrible as they are, they were competitive for some degree. But I had a list here, and this is from a guy on the Auburn sports mailing list that has always the inside information. This really blew my mind. This is what's become of our recruiting classes in 2010, 11, and 12. out of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, out of the 15 players we signed in 2010, 11, and 12, out of those 15 players, we have four of them playing now.
That's right.
Let me go through. Here's what happened to the others, just real quick. Did not qualify, dismissed, did not qualify, dismissed, transferred, transferred, dismissed, transferred, transferred, dismissed.
This has been the problem of the Tony Barbie era, is the roster turnover every year. We think we've got it together. We have a good core of talent. We're going to add a couple players, and then two or three players among that core are gone.
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't understand how are they bringing in players that are just so academically woeful that they're not going to, or that they have such behavior problems that they're either not going to qualify for another school, or nobody else is going to recruit them, or they're going to get dismissed as soon as they do something bad. I mean, how are we consistently recruiting these people that don't pan out?
I think, number one, the transfer rate in college basketball is 10 times higher than it is in college football. It's just players think, if I'm not playing and get a bunch of shots, I want to go somewhere else. And if I'm not, if my coach is being nice to me, I want to transfer and go somewhere else. So that happens, and that's happened to some of the players on Auburn's roster. It's happened to a lot of SEC teams. The other thing is, I think we're, you know, it's been very hard, the transfer situation in Auburn the last few years. The players getting kicked off the team and stuff. Every time you think, oh, we got a good base,
mm-hmm.
you know, guys get in trouble, and Barbie, you know, is not hesitant to kick them off the team for, you know, and you don't want them to keep guys on the team who are doing things wrong. You just want them to recruit guys who are good players that don't get into that stuff. But the reality is, Auburn is at the bottom of the barrel of SEC basketball, mm-hmm. and it's tough to get good players who could play, you know, competitive basketball against SEC competition and stay in school and, you know, be happy if they're coming off the bench and getting a few shots a game or whatever. So it's been a problem, and it's going to continue to be a problem. Here's what this is just so depressing now is, you know, we're 0-6 in the SEC, and we've lost 16 in a row SEC games in basketball.
Good grief.
So, you know, I think Barbie's a good coach. I think the team plays hard. You could see in this recent stretch where, you know, we played Missouri and Florida, who are both ranked teams, and we were right there with them in the last mm-hmm. minute of each game, and, you know, mm-hmm. kind of basically one possession game. And, you know, until this Arkansas game, we weren't getting blown out in these games. They were all kind of tough, close losses and stuff. But, you know, who are the players on the team who are making plays? You know, it's transfer from Virginia, KT Harrell and Chris Denson. And, you know, not a lot else exciting going on there. SEC basketball is not good. And, you know, here's the other conundrum that Auburn's in is Auburn's schedule ranking in basketball, the difficulty schedule in RPI is we're in like the 280th ranked schedule. So, you know, it's one of those things where Barbie doesn't want to schedule a bunch of brutally tough teams because he wants the players to get some wins early on and feel like they're having some success.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you don't schedule tougher teams, then, you know, you're hurting the whole SEC's RPI ranking when the SEC is trying to get teams into the NCAA tournament. So it's one of those things where, you know, Anthony Grant at Alabama went through this last year where they played a really brutal schedule. I mean, they played a bunch of big-time college teams, and they lost a lot of those games, and then their final record wasn't that good, and people were complaining about him, and he could have played Cupcake U basketball team, and they'd have won all those games. So mm-hmm. it's that scheduling matters, but the reality is there's just not as much talent in the basketball team as we want there to be, and, you know, you don't see this turning around in a good way for Barbie. You think, I think he's going to be gone at the end of the year. And
but who are you basketball? Who are you going to get, though? Who would want to come and be the Auburn basketball coach? I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you know, I asked the question earlier, would you rather apply for the UAB football coach job or the Auburn basketball coaching job? I don't know which would be considered worse at this point.
I mean, we do have nice facilities. The new arena is excellent. It's really good. Play in its conference where you think if you come in and you do something, you could certainly advance up in the SEC West quickly because there's not that many teams ahead of you that really scare anybody. So,
yeah.
But, you know, it's not looking good. I mean, you got to think, who would you hire? Barbie was the number, you know, the number one assistant on a team that, you know, was a national title winning team. So, and had been the head coach at UMass and stuff. So I don't know who's out there that, you know, the teams fans would get excited about, and that could bring in good players. It's the young assistant somewhere, some up and coming coach at some smaller school that's taken their team to the NCAA tournament. We try and steal them away. Would they come? I don't know, but we're going to find out. I have to say that, you know, I think the recent one we saw, Jacobs hired a new baseball coach, and he stole away the baseball coach from Oklahoma, who was a, you know, a contending team and a College World Series contending team. So, you know, maybe he could do something like that in basketball. That would be impressive.
Yeah, that's the one hope. I mean, if he's, you know, I hate to think we're putting our hopes in Jay Jacobs' hands, but bless his heart. I mean, but I don't know. It's depressing me to talk about Auburn basketball. I just don't see a light at the end of the tunnel. I'm afraid when I finally do see a light at the end of the tunnel, it's an oncoming freight train. So I don't know what to think. I just missed, you know, we kind of came of age in the time of from Charles Barkley through all the way through Wesley Person, that whole string there where we were good more often than not. And sure, I miss being a player in the NCAA tournament. I miss getting in and winning a couple of games in the tournament, getting to the 32, getting to the 16. We even got to the Elite Eight one year, and that was after Barkley. So, yeah, I miss those days. I can't even remember the last time we were in the NIT now.
I can't either.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's time to go get Cliff Ellis back.
You don't want to go there because I don't think we were doing things the right way all the time in that era. So
yeah,
you got to get somebody. This is the other part. You get somebody who can win without getting us on probation in basketball too.
Yeah, that may be a bridge too far. All right. Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
No, I mean, signing day's first Wednesday in February. It's right around the corner. So looking forward to that. That'll be exciting. It's always an exciting day. And there, you know, this staff pulled off some big last minute stuff last year. So it'll be exciting to see what happens there.
Yep. All right. Well, this was fun. We covered a whole lot of ground, and hopefully we'll give Auburn fans that are sort of coming down from the 2013 season and the way it ended and everything, and a chance to kind of a reason to look forward to the future and to be excited about it. And it's only going to get better from here. So I guess we're going to be on sort of a bi-weekly schedule for the immediate future just because things have dialed back a little bit. I guess probably our next episode will be after signing day, maybe, or right around
there.
Sure,
we'll that week.
And we'll talk about how that's going. So, okay, well, John, our time is up. We thank you folks for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.